Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 89. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest Lacey Cagle, Education Director of Northwest Earth Institute. After the conversation in this episode, I'll report on some newer services we're offering. And if you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. Northwest Earth Institute is a nonprofit organization that inspires people to take responsibility for the Earth. NWEI was founded in 1993 with a simple objective: to give people a framework to talk about our relationship with the planet and to share in discovering new ways to live, work, create, and consume. For over 20 years, NWEI has helped make change more possible, more social, and yes, more fun by helping people connect with their communities and take action together. A Different Way, Living Simply in a Complex World, the newest book from Northwest Earth Institute, offers us a chance to reconnect with what matters most, explore practical ways to simplify our lives and to reduce our impact. It joins a collection of superb discussion guides, including Sustainability Works, Rethinking Business as Usual, Change is Our Choice, Creating Climate Solutions, Seeing Systems, Peace, Justice, and Sustainability, Hungry for Change, Food Ethics and Sustainability, Reconnecting with Earth, A World of Health, Connecting People, Place, and Planet, and others. You can order any of those through the NWEI website, nwei.org. Now here's Lacey, recently recorded.
Well, it's my pleasure to be speaking to Lacey Cagle, the Director of Learning for the Northwest Earth Institute. Now, Lacey, you may be relatively new to the Institute. I go back a long ways with the Institute and have a great deal of respect for what you and your colleagues do. Let's first of all talk about the model. I think the model is really important because you're not just churning out more curricula. You are encouraging people, first of all, to talk and then to act. This is not an organization that just produces books for people to read in the privacy of their own living room, correct?
That's right, Jerry. It's really important for us when we're looking at sustainability issues in the world to know that more information doesn't really change much. People have access to information in so many places today, maybe too much information. It might be hard to know what is real and not real. But the information's there, and information alone does not change people's minds. So we created a process in which people could come together in community, either with community that they already had or to create new community, to find a community of support and actually taking action on issues that are important to them. So our process is really about getting people together to learn together, but to also have conversation with each other, to learn from each other's experiences, and then be able to move forward on action together.
Now, this book is called A Different Way, Living Simply in a Complex World. But this is not the first time that you have talked about voluntary simplicity. I remember a course earlier about it, and I understand this is not a rehash. This is a new course.
This is a new course, that's right. We created a course on voluntary simplicity way before I was a part of the organization in the early 90s. I think it was actually the second course that we created. And so we've had that course for a really long time. Voluntary simplicity has been very popular in circles that with people who are in faith communities and who are already interested in living simply. But these days, voluntary simplicity has a certain connotation for a lot of folks. People assume that you have to be retired or that you have to go live off the grid in the forest somewhere, or that you never buy anything. And we really wanted to expand the idea of what living simply and intentionally based upon your values could look like for people. So people who may not, who in some ways may not be voluntarily reducing their income. That's a big factor that a lot of people, particularly millennials, face these days, is they might have to work multiple jobs and still not make as much as they, as others would have in the past. So how do we put forth the idea of living simply and intentionally to a variety of people who have experiences not being able, maybe their dreams haven't been realized, or they're recognizing that the things that they've been pursuing in life or that their parents have pursued in life aren't bringing happiness. So really trying to expand that idea to more people, to a diverse community of people, and expand the idea of what living simply and intentionally can look like, whether you're in the forest or you're in the city or you're in the suburbs or wherever you might be.
Well, let's take a look at some of the subjects that you talk about in this new course book. For example, the first session is about finding your why, living a life of happiness and meaning. And in that, you include an article by, I think, Joshua Becker. His book is Why Millennials Are Trending Toward Minimalism. Now, you don't use minimalism in your title. In fact, minimalism is used very sparingly throughout the book. But minimalism seems to be a very similar to voluntary simplicity, but it seems to be the buzzword that's catching on with young adults.
That's right. Yes, we actually talked a lot about using that word or not. Minimalism seems to be, you're right, the buzzword, the trend right now for people who are interested in simple living. And there are a lot of really good resources out there for that. Minimalism can also have the connotation of you only live with 100 things, or that you're constantly decluttering. And so we stayed away from that word quite a bit because it has so many different meanings to different people. We tried to use simplicity because we felt like we could better define it. There's so many blogs on minimalism right now. And some of them really are in line with kind of the values that we're looking at, and some of them aren't. But Joshua Becker's, his work does a lot of good stuff with minimalism, helping people to figure out kind of what the motivations might be for it and how they might make it something that works for them.
All of us fall victim to trends. And one of the current trends is the tiny house. And,
right. You
know, it's a lot of fun. There's a whole new series on Home and Garden TV about tiny houses. And, you know, it's wonderful to see the variety of reasons why people are looking for tiny houses. We also see, on the other hand, people who are spending as much time and money on their tiny house as they would on a mansion.
Yes. Yes, there are so many trends in minimalism right now that maybe don't fit with the reasons why people might want to practice minimalism in the first place. There are a lot of beautiful pictures out there of these wide open lofts with the sun pouring in and just no possessions on the tables. And I think that a lot of people feel like they have to meet a certain aesthetic idea for minimalism. I think there's a lot of that out there, as well as the idea of a tiny house, for example, where, yes, you might be paying more than you would for something that already exists that could meet your needs that wouldn't require more resources. There are a lot of people who are living in tiny homes and who are living by their values. Our former executive director, Mike Mercer, is who we actually dedicated this course to, and we all agreed that Mike had this great way of living a simple life that was all about adventure for him. So many people choose simplicity because they want peace. They need more quiet. They need more space. And Mike's choice of simplicity was really based upon adventure, living life to the fullest. And so he and his partner built a tiny home and did a whole bike move. And I would say that Mike, out of most people I know, really lives simplicity. So I don't think that living in a tiny home is antithetical to minimalism or simplicity, but I think that you have to do a lot of soul searching to figure out what your motivations are and if you're really living by your values or if you're trying to live up to an ideal that somebody else has created.
Thank you, Lacey. I had the privilege of interviewing Mike on a previous episode of this podcast. Now, I noticed that you have some profiles that I assume that you wrote, some interviews with Simple Livers. There's one in almost each of the six sessions of this course.
Yes, that's right.
Tell us about how that came about, how you found these people, why you selected them. Why are you using these personal examples?
Well, so at Northwest Earth Institute, we have a history of trying to find articles or have articles written by thought leaders in a particular area of sustainability. So we have a lot of articles written by Michael Pollan and Barbara Kingsolver and Wendell Berry, and those are wonderful and beautiful, and we really appreciate them. But in trying to expand the idea of living a simple life, we wanted to show ordinary people who might not be the people who are writing books about what they're doing, but they've chosen to live intentionally and simply for their own reasons. So I actually did a broad search. I asked many people on my network, who would you say is living a simple and intentional life? And we had many people that were recommended, and I searched through them and asked for interviews for folks. And so, yes, all of the ones that are included in the course were recommended by someone else who said, I think this person emulates simplicity in a way that I want to live my own life. So we interviewed a few people in Oregon, and then we also interviewed Seth Coe, who lives here in St. Louis, where I live, and Felima Selden, who lives in Ohio. And it was really great to see people across the country who live in cities, who live outside of the city, who are living on farms, and to hear from them their stories. Some of them started down the road to simplicity not intentionally and kind of realized that halfway down the road, and other people made that very conscious effort at the very beginning of their journey. So it was great to hear from different people why they were living simple lives and how they had gotten to that point in their life.
The second session is called Times Change, and that deals with busyness, distraction, and mindfulness. So there is a section on, of course, meditation, but also talking about multitasking, why it's hurting our brains. The one that I like is Family Rituals Protect Time. Tell us a little bit about this session.
This session itself, it's really interesting when you talk to people these days about why they want to live simple lives. So many people feel like they don't have time. And I actually really like the very first article in the session, Why Being Too Busy Makes Us Feel So Good, because the author talks about being in a group talking about time and mindfulness and busyness. And someone rushes in last minute and says, I'm sorry, I got caught in a traffic jam. And the author says, we're in Fargo, North Dakota. There's no traffic here. But how when we feel stressed, we actually create busyness that might not exist otherwise. So our brain and our bodies can continue to feel like we don't have enough time because of the stress. So that kind of creates this feedback loop that builds upon itself. And I know so many people who, particularly people who are doing good work, who are working for nonprofits, who are trying to make the world a better place, but feel so busy for various reasons, they never feel like they have time to take a breath, to sit down, to really enjoy the world that they're working to save. So this came up as an important topic when we were talking about what we wanted to introduce to folks for this course. Family Rituals Protect Time, the article that you mentioned is by Marie Sherlock. It's actually an excerpt from her book. She talks about how family rituals can help you, even if they're really short, even if they're just, you know, right before bedtime or right before a meal or something that you say every time you come home, how creating ritual can help you save the time for the things that are most important to you. And the book that her article is excerpted from is called Living Simply with Children.
Thank you. Having, of course, written a lot of curriculum myself on simple living, I really am attracted to the next chapter called Lighten Up, Consume Less, and Create More. And in that, there's these wonderful topics like enjoy without owning, or four questions to ask yourself before you buy a product. Let's trash the idea of garbage. And the one that I want to focus on is why sending your old clothes to Africa doesn't work. Tell us more about that session.
We were so fortunate to have some really great folks on our curriculum committee who guided this session, people who are waste experts and master recyclers. So this session was really fun to work with them on. Betty Shelley, who is actually interviewed for the session, has been a volunteer with Northwest Earth Institute since we began, and she does a great job of bringing humor as well as good factual information to what we do. So with the article that you just mentioned, why sending your clothes to Africa doesn't help, I think it's really, we were looking at the way in which today's focus on minimalism can also focus on materials, but in a different way. So you have all of these really great resources for people about how they can declutter, how they can get rid of the too much stuff that they have. But what can happen is that people go through this cycle of decluttering where they will get rid of all these things that they have in their house, and then they have all this extra space, or they realize they needed something they got rid of, and so they accumulate more things, and then they get rid of them again. And I think clothes are a really great example of this. I know I have this problem in my own life where I am like, oh, I have too many clothes. I don't need this many clothes. So I go to a clothing exchange or I donate them, and then somehow next year my closet's filled up again. So this article is really kind of helping people to think about downstream from your donations what happens, and how in many places we've donated our excess goods, but it's actually had a negative effect on their local economy, because when you can get clothes for cheaper free, then local people cannot produce the clothes that people will actually buy. And so thinking about how our waste, there is no such place as a way. Our waste, even if we're not putting it in the landfill, even if we're trying to do good with it, might still have negative consequences on other people.
Thank you, Lacey. Being an internet activist myself now, I'm attracted to the session on technology, connection, and disconnection. For example, there we have the plugged-in paradox, why always being connected makes it harder to connect. Or, for example, living in the age of distraction. Tell us more about that session.
Yes, Jerry, I also can really relate to this. As someone who does so much of my work on the computer, I find myself often looking for a website, and then I'll realize I've gone to Facebook and didn't even know I did it. It's amazing how that can become a part where it's something that you are not mindful of, that you don't think about it, even if you're trying to use technology for good. So this session seemed really important. In the past, we with Voluntary Simplicity, our discussion course, we did focus on technology, but with the advance of social media and digital media, this has changed so much for people. It's not just about turning off the TV at night. It's about something that's infiltrating maybe every single moment of your life. There are so many people who go to sleep with their cell phones and wake up with their cell phones and scan through their social media accounts and realize that they don't want to do it, but still have a hard time stopping because it becomes a habit and it might even become an addiction. So we were really trying with this session to get people to kind of pause and take a step back and think about it. And as you said, you can be a social media activist. Like, there are many ways in which social media can be used to spread information, to start movements, to connect with people if you don't have a way of connecting with them otherwise. And we wanted to make sure that we honored that there are some really great ways that social media can make our lives better, but there's also a lot of negativity in our lives because of social media. And how can we step back and really use it for what we want to use it for, and not for what the app developers are creating the apps for. So again, kind of using that media literacy, social media literacy in our lives to make sure that we are living by our own values and not what someone else is putting upon us.
Oh, that's beautiful, Lacey. Let's move on then to media literacy, session 5, because that really is the core of so much of consumerism, is people becoming aware of how we're affected by advertising, for example. And in this session, you recommend a video called The High Price of Materialism. Now, if I remember correctly, the book The High Price of Materialism by Tim Kasser, and I had the pleasure of interviewing Tim on an earlier episode of this podcast. So in here, we have, for example, this beautiful article, Distinguishing Fake News from Real News. And I've been so, moved in the last couple of months since the election that I've created, in fact, a series called Banishing Fake News. But tell us more about your approach in this session.
Yes, this is actually something that sort of evolved as we were creating the course. We originally intended this session to focus almost entirely upon consumption and consumer values. But as we were creating the course and everything that was happening during this election cycle and afterwards, we realized there were other parts of media literacy that were really important when we're talking about simple and intentional living. So we did include some things about fake news and about how we can have echo chambers in our own social media and where we get our news and information from. So that was really important for us. And it's really hard. There was a study, as this article points out, there was a study recently that showed that students had a dismaying inability to reason about information they saw on the internet. So even graduate students were having a hard time picking out what was fake news and what was real news. So this is really important, I think, both for our own purposes and then also in responding to other people who might be using fake news to validate their own points. So we offer a few resources on that, really high quality websites that are doing some great work on helping people understand the difference between fake news and how you can determine what's fake news and what's real news. And then we also have a really great article right before that from Media Sparks, which is a Canadian nonprofit, and helping people work through like the questions that they can ask for any media source about who benefits from this and what is the message and do I agree with this message, and there's data to back this up. So really trying to kind of develop that skill for folks that, or help people develop that skill that, again, with, I think particularly with social media and digital media, it's changed so quickly, and there might not have been any kind of formal education for folks who really want to be able to distinguish what is real and what is fake, but need a few little guidelines to do so.
Now, the final session is called Moving Forward, so I assume this is kind of the action component of the course.
That's right. We really wanted a session that could get things up for people so they could take some time to think about what they had learned and what they had done throughout the course, what they gained, the insight they gained from each other, and then move forward. So helping people to say, I want to take this not just inside of my life, but also outside of my life. How can I affect broader change? How can I work to recreate systems that are beneficial for us all? And what can I as an individual, and what can our group do to do that work?
You have some sample discussion questions that I find really intriguing, Lacey. These are not puff questions by any means. So I want to hear your responses to a couple of these. For example, in what ways can simplicity become an act of privilege? How can simplicity be practiced to the benefit of people with less opportunity?
Yes, so many of our discussion questions come from the questions we've asked ourselves as we're doing the course. I think simplicity can become an act of privilege when people don't have to worry about their possessions. So many people who are decluttering, who say, I don't want too much stuff, they have the privilege of being able to get rid of that stuff because they know how they have the money to purchase more. Whereas some folks may not have that privilege. There's actually a really great article earlier on in the course about that very thing, about particularly immigrants and poor families. They don't have the option to get rid of things because they might need them in the future. And it's called Marie Kondo and the Privilege of Clutter. So I think that's definitely one aspect. And I also think there's an aspect of simplicity that has been more for white folks who are closer to retiring age, who already have their nest egg built up, and then they have some flexibility with downshifting or whatever they might be wanting to do in their lives. Whereas there might be younger folks now who don't have that money saved up. And it's a scary thought to work part-time or not get that corporate job because you might not have money in the future for the things that you want. So how can we talk about simplicity in a way that helps people who might be working two full-time jobs or might be single parents or whatever it might be, to also be able to live by their values and to be able to prioritize the things that are important to them, even if they're having to work maybe more than they would like to or have other financial difficulties.
Well, if I can just put an added personal comment here, Lacey, since you brought up the idea of some folks not having, you know, savings, if you don't already have a course, I would recommend a course or a session of a course about financial literacy, you know, learning about sharing, saving, and spending, you know, that formula, those kinds of things. So that's just a little sidelight. You can comment on that if you like.
I think that's a great idea, and I think that that could be useful for many people, including myself. So I'll take note of that.
Moving on to another question. What are the systemic barriers that lead to the promotion of recycling rather than reducing and reusing? Now, in the recycle arrow circle, of course, it's reduce, reuse, recycle. Recycle is last. And I like to add to that restore. So what are some of the systemic barriers?
That's really good. I like the restore. Betty Shelley, who I mentioned earlier, she always talks about adding R's to the reduce, reuse, recycle. So restore, repair, refuse. I really like that idea of adding R's. But you're right that we have this mantra that starts out with reduce and then reuse and then recycle. But recycle is often what we focus on. And for a variety of reasons. I mean, one, because it is recycling is what's most promoted by any corporation who might benefit from you not reducing or reusing to begin with. We have a lot of companies who want you to buy their products, but they can focus on recycling and they can feel green without having the big economic change of us reducing and reusing. So I do think that's one aspect of it. I also think that recycling can often be what's obvious for people. So if you think about when people start wanting to care about the environment, and if they start recycling is one of the things most people start doing to begin with, if it's available to them, or maybe even if it has not been available to them and they have to like put a little more effort into it, when you start seeing your trash pile go down and your recycling bin get fuller, it can make you feel good because you see this physical evidence of a change that you've made. Whereas if you're reducing and reusing, that might not necessarily be as obvious for folks. I think that there was a great example in an article in session 3 that was written by Alex Mim for us called Swimming Upstream. And he talks about how Amazon used to send their smaller items in plastic bags. And consumers were really upset about this because they wanted to be able to recycle the packaging that it came in. So Amazon now sends their smaller items out in boxes so people can recycle it and feel good about that. But actually, over the course of the life cycle of a product, they're creating a lot more carbon emissions by creating and using the cardboard boxes instead of the plastic. So sometimes there are things, there are environmental assessments that don't seem obvious to us, or they don't, it's not, it requires so much research to figure out which is better for the environment that we often focus on the things that are more tangible, like recycling.
Yes, there are downsides to green business. I mean, it's important, of course, that we use green philosophy when creating new products. But if we're going to focus on reducing, then we'll also reduce green products, too. Let's talk about some of your other programs in addition to your courses. For example, the Eco Challenge. How often do you have it? Who's participating? How does it work?
Yes, the Eco Challenge actually happens every October, so once a year. It is a free event, and it's online. So it and the way that our discussion courses sort of start with the knowledge and then the reflection and then the action, Eco Challenge kind of reverses that. So it starts with an action that you want to do that then you can share with your community and reflect upon. So there are different challenge categories like waste and community and nature, and you can choose whatever makes sense to you to start with. You choose an action that you will change or you can commit to for 2 weeks, and then you can check in every day to see if you've to show if you've completed your action. You can see what others are doing, and you can comment on their posts to give encouragement and inspiration. And then there people sign up for the Eco Challenge in teams. So then the teams can gain points together, they can compete with other teams, and it makes this lifestyle change a bit of a game for people. There are prizes that people win for the public Eco Challenge. We also have recently created an option for folks who want to do the Eco Challenge at other times in the year and maybe have it more branded to whatever organization they're working with. So we have an option for a campus Eco Challenge that colleges can use throughout the year with their students, and that kind of protects people's information and privacy a bit more, but gives them a chance as an organization to do the Eco Challenge as well.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Well, thank you very much, Lacey, for your encouragement, for your good work.
You've been listening to my conversation with Lacey Cagle, Education Director of Northwest Earth Institute. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com or on our Facebook page or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click window number 3. Also, it really helps our visibility when you give Simple Living Works a 5-star rating on iTunes. My colleague Lee Van Ham's new book was released in February. Lee's the executive director of Jubilee One Earth Economics. Entitled From Egos to Eden, Our Heroic Journey to Keep Earth Livable, it is volume 2 of Lee's trilogy called Eden for the 21st Century. I've read an advanced copy, reviewed it, and highly recommend it. Lee and I talked about Volume 1, Blinded by Progress, and Volume 2 on podcasts. The links to those episodes are given in the show notes. We've started a new series in 2017 called Simpler Living Sanity Suggestions. Amid all the changes in our country, we offer a new suggestion each week, not as a placebo, but as encouragement to do something for yourself, your family, your community that may counteract any negative stuff that may be coming or happening now. The suggestions are given in the weekly nudge. The weekly nudge and our weekly digest together make up the Simple Living Works blog. Also, a link to all the sanity suggestions is given in the show notes. I started a little campaign recently as a response to regressive policies in D.C. and many of the states called I Buy Blue, How About You? Click the link in the show notes or subscribe to the Simple Living Works blog. Simply send us an email headed subscribe blog, then confirm your subscription when a confirmation email arrives. I've blogged recently that we were changing our long-standing alternate celebrations to non-conform freely celebrations because the terms alternate and alternative have been compromised by the new buzzwords alternative facts in D.C. So I've started a short series called, appropriately enough, Banishing Fake News. You can also read each installment in the Simple Living Works blog or read more of it on the Simple Living Works site. See the link in the show notes. I hope these new short features add positively to the national conversation about social change and support the voluntary simplicity movement. After reading them, your comments are welcome. Need a nudge? I've been producing today's Simpler Living Nudge for several months and welcome you to subscribe for free. Receive it by email or Twitter. Just send me an email with the subject nudge at simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. I've received a lot of interesting response, which you can read on the simplelivingworks.org site. Click on Recent Comments in window number 5, or see the link in the show notes. We've simplified our blogs for this year. The Weekly Nudge focuses only on the efforts of Simple Living Works. The Weekly Digest includes the latest posts from our colleague organizations. Both come with a free subscription to our Simple Living Works blog. The most complete, almost obsessively detailed monthly digest is now updated at least once a week and kept on the Simple Living Works site. Links to the monthly log are given in both the Weekly Nudge and the Weekly Digest. We hope you'll check it out, but we don't want you to be overwhelmed by the amount of help available toward a life of voluntary simplicity, which young adults now are inclined to call minimalism. I've lined up some interesting thinkers and activists for this year, including soon Hazel Henderson, co-founder of Ethical Markets, and author and blogger Susan Vogt about her latest project. Well, time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscriptions to this podcast and to our weekly blogs are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share-Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We know that we do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everybody's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just public policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Janzen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Simply live, learn to live simply so others can live.